the rare occasion where we have 2 weeks in a row with Shir. So I have nothing to speak about last week's Sedra, since last week we spoke about last week's Sedra. So we'll speak about this coming week's Sedra, which is unfortunately always relevant. There is a, according to some opinions, a prohibition in the Torah, one of the Taryag mitzvahs, Lo yiyeh kekorach v'chol adosa, not to be like Korach, not to be a Bal Machlokas, not to be somebody who causes strife and arguments or whatever. It's a lav in the Torah. And specifically, even though all kinds of fights and machlokas is negative, usually, but especially the exact kind of machlokas where Korach argued against Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, anyone who argues against his Rav, against a leader, Torah leader, it says is as if he's arguing and fighting against the Rabbanu Shalom. You have to understand what is so serious about it. And in any case, they say that it says Bnei Korach lo mesu, the children of Korach didn't die, and they say euphemistically that that means that there are always heirs to Korach in the world. There is no shortage of Bali Machlokas. There is no, every community at every time in every place experiences some kind of strife, machlokas, arguments, or whatever. And they usually are machlokas l'shem shamayim, where everybody thinks what they're doing is for the sake of heaven, and that's why those machlokas never end, because everybody's convinced that they are doing it for good purposes. Rashi, in the beginning of this week's Sedra, says, Parsha zu nidrish yofet. This parsha is beautifully expounded. So some say that there are always people who will be able to expound various reasons why it's okay to have any machlokas. And in addition, they say that every parsha is relevant for that parsha. So a person can expound on that parsha in that week, but the next week he has to expound on something new. But machlokas is always relevant because it's always there. That therefore this parsha is well expounded all the time. So therefore, I think that it would be important to understand the anatomy of machlokas. What causes people to argue, especially against leadership? Why are there so many machlokas in shuls, in communities, and specifically targeting the rabbi, the community leaders, or whatever? The and I think that the first few sentences in the Sedra can be expounded in a less than literal way, but to a certain degree in a yes literal way, to understand the various players, cast of players when it comes to machlokas. Why, what different kind of people initiate machlokas? I don't have to translate machlokas, we all know what it is. The it's like you don't have to translate chutzpah. The what are the cast of characters that create machlokas, and what is psychologically behind their motives? First we have Korach. Korach, he initiated this argument against Moshe Rabbeinu because he was jealous. He felt entitled. He felt that he deserved more than others, and he really, it started with a very menial, small appointment. Who was going to be the head of the tribe of Kahas? And when Moshe Rabbeinu appointed Elitzofan ben Uziel and not Korach, Korach was jealous, and he went basically out of his mind and decided that he was going to argue against everything that Moshe Rabbeinu did, not only that one small appointment. And he wants to vie to be the Kohen Gadol instead of Aaron HaKohen. Korach, what led Korach to feel entitled? There are people in this world that feel that they deserve special treatment. And if somebody else gets what they think they deserve, that's when they oppose leadership and in that way feel that they can get what they want, that they're being held back from because of the powers that be. Korach felt entitled for many reasons, and each one is a good example for the same kind of person in different venues. Korach, first of all, was a very rich man. He was one of the few richest people who ever lived. Korach. So some people feel entitled because they're rich, and feel that they're powerful, and they therefore are jealous when other people get what they think is coming to them. Then the Torah goes out of its way to tell us Korach's lineage. Korach ben Yitzhar. Yitzhar means oil. Oil can have two connotations. One is that it alludes to wisdom, enlightenment. The oil is what you burn to make light. Enlightenment is shemen. Shemen is a euphemism, is a symbol of wisdom. So some people think, not because they're rich, because they're smart, and therefore they're entitled over other people and become jealous when other people who are less bright than them get what they think is coming to them. Another idea of Yitzhar Shemen is that oil doesn't mix with water. Oil separates and is separate to itself. Another cause of machlokes is people who are basically antisocial. They don't want to be part of a community. They don't want to be part with everybody else. They're off to themselves, and therefore they are not team workers. They want everything for themselves. So that's another cause of machlokes. People who just can't be part of a group, can't be part of a team effort, and they feel that they are beyond and better than everybody else, and therefore they are jealous when somebody else gets something they think is coming to them. Then there's Kahas. Kahas were the family that carried the Aron. They had a very prestigious position. Some people may not be rich, they may not be smart, but they have prestigious positions. And because of that, they feel that they're entitled, and they're jealous of other people if they get what they think is coming to them. And finally, Levi. Levi was a person who had a tremendous amount of deeds. He was a righteous person. He was a meyuchas. He was from the more important tribes. Some people are not necessarily rich or smart or have important positions, but they have yichus. They have family background. Or they consider themselves very, very heroic people and righteous people because of their deeds. And because of that, they feel entitled, and if somebody else gets what they think is coming to them, they rebel against the authority that gave those people what they have and passed them over. That is the first cause of machlokes. Basically, bottom line is kina, jealousy, which is generated by someone who thinks that he's entitled to something that he's not getting. And that is what Korach said, kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim. It's not me, but the entire Jewish people are entitled. They're all holy. So why are you taking what belongs to them? Why are you, Moshe Rabbeinu, giving away something that they're entitled to? That was the first complaint of Korach. And it's interesting that women play a very, very strong role in machlokes, to the point where it says that a... don't get insulted, because I'm going to turn this into something nice. Right. The halacha says that a husband should not tell his wife everything that goes on with him during the day? What shouldn't he tell her? All the little spats he has with people. This one called him an idiot, and this one, started a fight with him or whatever, for two reasons. One is that if the wife constantly hears all the people that don't like her husband and call him an idiot and all the other things that he's called during the day, right, after a while she's going to begin to believe it. And she's going to think that it must be true. If everybody thinks like that, then it must be true. So it's not a great idea for a husband to relate those things to his wife. But there's a second reason. People who are involved, especially men, in these little spats, and it applies to children also. There's a very strong connection between men and children. It bothers them. Next day they go back and deal with these people pretty much normally. They have to work with these people. They have to deal with them. But the wife who's not involved, and she feels more her husband's honor than he feels, and she makes more of it than it really is, and she holds a grudge for a lot longer than the husband does, and she incites the husband to make more of this than it really is. So in that respect, women, to a certain degree, it says that Korach's wife incited him to this machlokas. He came home and he said, innocently, you know what we happened today to us? Moshe Rabbeinu dedicated the Leviim. How did he do it? He made us shave our entire body. We were like one day old children. And then he picked us up and waved us like a lulav. His wife said, he's trying to make a fool out of you. What kind of ridiculous thing is this? Right? He wants to make you fools. So Korach said, no, he did it to himself too. He's also a Levi. He said, yeah, he's willing to make himself a fool just to make you look like a fool. And she raged him on. She incited him. And she was the one who was the mastermind of this machlokas. On the other hand, a woman, if she wants to, can calm her husband down and relieve him of machlokas. On ben Peles, one of the cast of characters of this machlokas, right, we'll see in one second what his problem was, he came home and he told his wife, we're arguing on Moshe Rabbeinu. Korach may be the Kohen Gadol instead of Aaron. So his wife said, you idiot, what are you getting involved in this for? No matter what, you're going to remain who you are. If Korach wins, he becomes Kohen Gadol. If Aaron wins, he's Kohen Gadol. You remain Om Ben Pel. What are you getting involved in this? So he said, yeah, but I gave my word. I can't, you know, back out now. She said, let me take care of it. So she put him to sleep. She gave him wine, put him to sleep. She went and sat dressed immodestly outside the house, knowing these people are frum people. These are big tzaddikim, these, what's it called, Bali Machlokas. They're not going to come into a house where a woman is dressed immodestly. So when they came to get him, she said, I'm sorry, he's unavailable. And they didn't start up with her, they went away. And then, when the earth opened up, and he started to roll off the bed into the mouth of the earth, his wife said, that's not fair. He didn't, what's it called, he didn't go. Even though he himself was willing to go, I prevented him. So this is his reward, that he's going to get punished now. And God agreed with her, and he was saved. So a wife can either save her husband from machlokas, or she can be the one to stoke the flames of machlokas. And my experience throughout the years has been that usually in shul politics or whatever, it's not the men that are the main problem, but it's the women behind the men that really stoke the fires. Or sometimes the women are the ones who can calm the air. They have a tremendous power of being either a help or a tremendous hindrance. So that's another ingredient in machlokas, the women. Another, then there's Dasan v'Aviram. Dasan and Aviram didn't feel entitled. They weren't looking for a position. What was their gripe? Why did they get involved in this machlokas? Because way back, Moshe Rabbeinu, when one of them was hitting the other, we don't know who was hitting, Dasan hitting Aviram or Aviram hitting Dasan, but
they're
one
brothers.
Hit the other.
They're
right?
Brothers, right? Huh? Brothers.
They were brothers, yeah. And Moshe Rabbeinu rebuked the one who had his hand up ready to hit the other one. Now I understand, therefore, why that one would have had a grudge against Moshe Rabbeinu. But why the other one? The other one was being saved by Moshe Rabbeinu from his brother's fist. Why would he have a grudge against Moshe Rabbeinu? The answer is, these people, what did they respond to Moshe when he said that? Mi samcha le'ish sar v'shofet oleinu. Who made you the boss over here? Who let you mix in to our private fight? We're brothers. When a fight, we'll fight. You're not the boss over here. There are people in this world, second idea of machlokas, that don't like authority. They don't like anybody to tell them what to do. They like to be hefker. And in fact, it says they were b'nei Eliyav, right? That the Medrash says, shelo ola aleihem ol. What's it called? Dosel Aviram b'nei Eliyav, right? That no, they, what's it called? They didn't have a yoke over them. All av. The Eliyav, even though it's with an aleph, yeah. Right? But the aleph and the ayin interchange sometimes. Eliyav, the yoke of a father never went over them. Their parents probably never exercised authority over them, never disciplined them, and they were people who didn't understand authority and discipline. And therefore, when somebody disciplined them, even if they were the beneficiary, one of them, I don't like people telling me what to do. So Moshe Rabbeinu was an authority figure. There are people in this world who do not like authority figures.
Who says this?
Who says what?
Eliyav,
the Medrash, Medrash HaGadol. I was thinking also, it says Dosan and Avira. It hints to this idea. Dosan, Dos means the law, right? Whenever you have a nun at the end of the word, it contracts it and makes it smaller. So Dosan means he doesn't like laws. He doesn't like the law. Right? He likes to be free. Dosan. Aviram is, my father is the highest. Nobody else tells me what to do. And they didn't even accept the yoke of authority of their father. Of course, you gained somebody else. Therefore, they came with another claim. So they were people who were disgruntled people. There's always disgruntled people in a community that don't like authority. They don't like to be told what to do, whether it's by the rabbi or the board of directors or the shamus or anybody else, right? I'll do what I want to do, and anybody who makes laws and rules, I'm not interested. And they become very disgruntled, and they'll join any machlokas that there is in order to throw off the yoke of authority. That's what they claimed, the second claim. First claim was, kol ha'eda kulam kadoshim, everybody's entitled. Why are you taking away what we're entitled for? That was Korach's problem. Then there's ubesocham Hashem. God is in our midst. He's not over us. He doesn't lord over us. He doesn't tell us what to do, as if God doesn't do that, right? But we have this relationship with God. Eliav, my God is like a father. He's not an authority figure. He doesn't tell us what to do. He's not a king. He's just our father. And God makes suggestions, what's good for us. That's how they look at religion. And therefore, ubesocham Hashem, God is Hashem, yudke vavke, merciful. And he's amongst us. He's not over us. So madua tishnasu, why do you put yourself over us? God himself doesn't put himself over us. He's in the midst of us, and he's merciful. So that's the second source, the second root of machlokes, is by people who are disgruntled and who don't want any authority. They don't want to bow to authority. They want to be free. That is a function of the second of the roots of sin, taiva. First one was jealousy. Second one is lust. Lust means I want to do what I want to do. I don't want anybody to tell me and curtail me from doing what I want to do. So people who are disgruntled, who can't accept authority, are basically bali taiva. They're people who want to fulfill all their desires, and they don't want anybody to hamper their ability to do what they want to do. And therefore, they don't like authority, they don't like rules, and they don't like people in authority positions. It's not only the rabbi, it's the board of directors, it's anybody who gives them rules and tells them what to do. Then there is own ben pelas. Own is a very interesting word, because the word own has many meanings, and a lot of them are contradictory. Own can mean mourning, an own name. It's a person who's in mourning, right? And own can mean poverty. Whereas own can also mean to acquire things and riches. And all these meanings have the different words of own that has these all these meanings. And so many of them seem to be contradictory. I think the major idea over here of own means a weakness, a weak person. Person who has no self-esteem. He's a nachschlepper. He's looking for action, right? He has nothing on his own. He's looking to attach himself to people who are, you know, in the limelight. So on the one hand, he feels poor, but he feels that if he attaches himself to somebody else, he can acquire something and become rich vicariously. So he wanted to attach himself to Korach, where the action is. And even though he personally is not going to gain anything, he's going to gain vicariously by being on with the people who are active, interesting people. So there are many people in this world, they're not going to instigate machlokas. They're not jealous people, they're not disgruntled people. They're just nachschleppers. When there's something doing, right, they don't have any self-esteem, they don't have they're weak, what's it called, weak-spined people, and they'll go along with whatever looks interesting. Anybody can pull them along one way or the other. That's why his wife was very successful in stopping him, because he wasn't really determined. He just was following the crowd. So his wife pulled him the other way. So there are people, again, that go with the crowd. And if the crowd is doing something interesting, I want to be part of it, because personally I don't feel I'm anything special, and I can be special by being part of the crowd. So that's the next kind of character that is involved in machlokas. And then comes the people who come after the machlokas. These are the initiators of the machlokas. Now comes the people who are opportunists. Once there's a machlokas, they think that they can gain from the fact that there is now a hullabaloo in the community, right? They can gain. And sometimes they do this l'shem shamayim, right? Since there are two different opinions and there's big questions on Moshe Rabbeinu we're going to champion the cause of justice and we are going to join this machlokes. Who are these people? They are the 250 Nesiei Ho'eda. They are people who were important people, themselves leaders. Kriyei Moed, the people who were called when people got together to have important meetings, they were invited. Anshei Shem, people looking for fame. There are people who are opportunists. And when there's discord in the community, they'll take advantage of it to try to better their agenda. To, what's it called, aggrandize themselves, pick themselves up a little bit at everybody else's expense. Those are the 250 people. And they were, what's it called, they saw an opportunity. And it says, interestingly, that the Gemara says that who were these 250 people? They were people who benefited from Korach's wealth. Korach supported them. Korach gave them presents. Korach gave them support. And therefore, they wanted to jump on the bandwagon and use this as an opportunity to advance their agenda. That's why, okay, and this is the third root of sin, covet. Kina, taiva, covet. Those are the three roots of sin, those are the three roots of machlokas. People who are jealous and feel entitled, people who don't like authority, who are basically people of desire and lust, want to do whatever they can, whatever they want, don't want to be told and curtailed. And lastly, people who are looking for covet. and they feel that they can further their agenda, jumping on the coattails of these of the machlokas. Okay, and therefore they came against Moshe Rabbeinu with the following times. On Kol Ha'eda Kulam Kedoshim, it said, they asked Moshe a talis that is completely tchelis. Does it need tzitzis? And one strand of tchelis. The tchelis is supposed to remind you of God's throne. Kisei HaKovod. This is the idea against COVID and against jealousy. Why? Because Korach said, look, if the entire garment is tchelis and everybody is really honorable, then why, we all feel entitled, why are you taking that honor for yourself? So is jealousy and honor working together? The answer is, yeah, you still need it. Why? Because everybody is looking out for their own honor, then that's something that shelo l'shem shamayim and very negative. But if people are looking out to get honor but not for themselves, because kisei HaKovod, they want to honor the Rabbanu Shel Olam with the honor they have, then they're willing to yield to other people, to be humble. So you need that tchelis, even though if you're completely covered with honor, but you need the seal to remember where the honor comes from, otherwise it becomes destructive. So you need the tzitzis, even though the whole beged is tchelis. Secondly, they came and they said, if a house has full of Sifrei Torah, do you need a mezuzah on the door? It's full of Sifrei Torah. It has all the parashios of mezuzah inside the house. Why do you need a mezuzah on the door? And all of this was to hint that if everybody is holy and honorable, why do you need a leader? And if everybody is smart, filled with Sifrei Torah, why do you need somebody to tell them what to do? We know ourselves. Intuitively, we know what to do. We're full of Torahs. The answer is you need it because you need the mezuzah on the door to shakai. Shakai means God limited the world. Omar li olam odai. There are limitations, there are boundaries in this world. And you can be full of Torah, but if you don't know boundaries, if you're not told here yes and here not, then the Torah is a sam hamavis. It becomes a poison. So that was the answer to that. The people who are looking for COVID, jealous, feel that if we're entitled, then why does there have to be a leader who takes the greatness for himself? You still need a leader, because you need to direct people how to use that honor properly. Just like you need the tchelis to remind you of God's honor, you don't get carried away with your own. And even if you're full of Torah, you still need a mezuzah to let you know what the boundaries are. That's why the mezuzah is on the doorway that separates between the public thoroughfare and the private. What is private shouldn't go outside. What's outside shouldn't come into your house. What can cross the threshold either way? Those are boundaries. And everybody needs boundaries. No matter how smart, no matter how much Torah you have, if you don't have someone who is there to make the rules and to make the boundaries, you're going to get carried away. And you're going to inevitably use the Torah in a negative way. So therefore, the leader is the one who has to take the tzibur and remind them not to be jealous and not to be running after their own covet or living without boundaries. That's the purpose of the leader. And in order to do that, there has to be a mesorah. The leader represents God, because he's God's representative in giving over the Torah and connecting them to God. Because if you do it on your own, without somebody from the outside to give you the boundaries and to remind you of what the purpose of everything is, you're going to get carried away with yourself and your own bias and subjectivity, and lead to destruction. So somebody who undermines the authority of a leader basically undermines God, because the way that the Torah is maintained with its integrity is that it is a Torah that has a Masorah to it. There is a tradition. You can't just make it whatever you want. And if you are biased, if you're subjective, you can twist and distort the Torah any way you want. So there have to be leaders that are able to make sure that the Torah remains true and remains faithful to what its foundations are. That's the whole idea of Masorah. And God doesn't do that directly. He does it through Torah leaders. So somebody who undermines the authority of a Torah leader and claims you don't need it, or that the Torah leader is not doing what he's supposed to be doing, or whatever, right? If it's true, then there are problems. But most of the time it's not true. In fact, even if it's true, and the Torah leader is not 100%, nobody's 100%. But there's a Sefer HaChinuch that says the following. It says you're supposed to follow the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, who are the Torah leaders of the generation, even if they tell you that right is left and left is right. Even if they're wrong. So some learn because they're not wrong. You think they're wrong. They're not wrong. But the Sefer HaChinuch says no. Except for the Pope, nobody is infallible, right? So, what's it called? Even Jewish leaders can be wrong. You can make mistakes. It's possible. Possible. It's better to listen to authority even if they're wrong. Because if you don't listen to them when they're wrong, you're going to think they're always wrong. And there won't be any authority. It's better to have authority where 95% of the time they're going to be right. And there'll be authority, then for that 5% that they're wrong, not to listen, and then you're always going to suspect that maybe they're wrong this time too. And there'll never be an authority. Better to have authority in Klal Yisrael, even if sometimes you're going to have to listen to them when they're wrong, when they make mistakes, than have to have no authority. Right. That's the authority is an important thing. And therefore someone who, because he feels he's entitled, and the authority is questioned, whether the rules are fair, or rules, I don't want any rules. I'm disgruntled because I don't want to be told what to do. And you try to undermine the authority in its essence, not the specific rules, but rules in general I don't like. Korach went against specific things that Moshe did. Dothan Aviram said, we don't need anything. The whole concept of rules we don't like. And then there's the people looking to be opportunists and take advantage of when there's a breakdown of authority, they can step in and assume something that they wouldn't have gotten had there been an authority figure. Though all of that is like you're arguing with God. Because the way the Rabbeinu Shel Olam deals with Klal Yisrael and makes sure that the Torah retains its authenticity and its faithful is through the Torah leaders. Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. Right? God doesn't do it directly. He does it through Torah leaders. That's his will. And therefore you should respect Torah leaders and listen to them. And if somebody undermines the authority of a Torah leader, whether he's the leader of the generation or the Sanhedrin or the rabbi in your shul or the teacher in your school or the principal of the school, whatever it may be, whatever the authority figure is in that area, as small or large as it may be, basically he's arguing with God. Because he is threatening the entire authenticity
fabric.
The fabric. There's another word I'm looking for. The authenticity is a better word than that. The what's emes of what's it called? The emes of Torah. And in order to do this, another ingredient of Machlokas is Vayakum Lifnei Moshe. The Medrash says, with tremendous Azas Ponim in Chutzpah. You can't be a good Baal Machlokas unless you're an Az Ponim. Right? So you need another ingredient. You need to be able to get a lot of Chutzpah to make a Machlokas. If you're a meek person, you're not going to be a good Baal Machlokas. So you have to generate and acquire a tremendous amount of chutzpah to do it, and usually Bali Machlokas are good at that, and the ones who are the most successful Bali Machlokas are Azei Panim, the bold Michutzofi. Okay. That's why, in the end, what did Moshe tell them? To bring Ketores. Why the Ketores? Because the Ketores is a symbol against this idea of Machlokas. Ketores is made of 11 different ingredients. 10 of them smell very nicely. One of them had a very foul smell. But when you put them all together, even the foul smelling one makes the other ones smell better. The balance between them comes out with even a nicer smell. We learn from that that when there's achdus in Klal Yisrael, when there's unity, even the bad smelling people, even the rishoyim, serve a purpose. When they're united, but when everybody's looking for himself, then you don't have this nice sweet smelling ketores. You have just, what's it called, individual things. Some of them smell good and some of them smell bad. But when you put them together, they're all very, very positive. And also, the Ketores made people rich. Ketores was a skula to become rich. So, it shows that it's not richness that makes you smell good. It's the fact that you smell good can make you rich. But don't think that the richness entitles you. And the whole idea of Ketores was that you take physical things, burn it, means that people can yield and be contrite and be humble and be more spiritual, then you have a sweet smell. But if everybody's standing on their own, I deserve this, I'm entitled to this, then it's a very bad smell. And that was the sin of Nadav and Avihu. They also brought Ketores. They thought that they could do whatever they wanted. When they want, where they want, there's no rules, there's no boundaries. There's no limitations. That also has the same sin. Both of those things. People who don't want boundaries, people who think they're entitled. Okay. Now it says that that's why Moshe Rabbeinu countered both of these different things with different claims. To Korach he said, "Hama'at mikem, is it a small thing that God made you a Levi? You also want to be a Kohen? You're jealous? You feel entitled? It's not enough what God gave you?" And to Dosan Aviram he said, what's it called? "I didn't take one donkey from them. I never did anything bad to them." Their complaint was that Moshe Rabbeinu is encroaching on their freedom. Right? People can do whatever they want. And Moshe Rabbeinu is oppressing them. Moshe Rabbeinu said, "I never oppressed you. I didn't take anything from you. I didn't, what's it called? I didn't do anything for my own purpose. I'm doing this in the name of God because this is what's necessary to make these boundaries and rules. I'm not doing it for my own personal purpose." So against Korach, he had the claim that, "Why are you jealous? It's not enough what you have." And against Dosan Aviram, he said, "You think I'm oppressive. I'm making rules and telling you what to do. I'm not doing it for my own purposes. I'm doing it because that's the way to keep the integrity." That's what I was looking for. The integrity of Torah. that's interesting. Whenever the Jewish people sinned, even by the Chet HaEgel, even by the Meraglim, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? Prayed for them. Begged God to have mercy on them. And here, just the opposite. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't pray for them, didn't ask God to have mercy, but he said, "I want these people swallowed up by the earth." Why? Because as long as the sin was a sin that came from taiva, from mistakes, whatever, there's hope for these people. But when people undermine the authority of Jewish leadership, then there's no hope. Then there's no future. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to stand on his own. Right? I'm not standing on my covet, I'm standing on the continuity of Torah. And for that, there can't be any mercy. And that was why the punishment came in two ways. Some of the people, Dosan and Aviram specifically, were swallowed up by the earth. And the people who brought the Ketores were burnt alive. Their souls were burnt, like Nadav and Avihu. The punishment fits the crime. When people don't want rules, anarchy, do whatever you want, what happens in a society like that? It says, "Have you mispal b'shloma shel malchus, daven for the welfare of the government, she'ul mole moroa ish esre'eu chayim below." Because if it wouldn't be for the fear of the government, if there's no discipline, there is no law and order, then there's anarchy, people swallow each other up alive. That's exactly what happened to Dawson and Avira. You don't want laws, you don't want anybody telling you what to do, you want total hefkeiros and anarchy, fine. Then you're going to be swallowed up. Society can't exist. You'll be swallowed up by the earth. And that's what happened to them. And the opposite, people looking for COVID, where they feel entitled, and they don't understand that there are limits in that too. Everybody has their place. Everybody can't be everything. Then if you try to get more than you deserve, or more than you're capable of having, then you know what it's like? This is a good example for us who live here and came from somewhere else. You have a 110 appliance that you brought with you from America, and by mistake you plug it in to the plug here. You know what happens to the appliance? It burns out. Gets burnt. Why? Because the current is too big for that motor. If you are jealous and looking for honor that you don't deserve, you're trying to plug yourself into 220 when you're only 110. So what happens to you? You get burnt up. That's what happened to them. What's it like in England? What's the... What? 240? Oh, so there's no problem. If you bring appliances from England, you can, if you get the right plug, you can plug them in over here. Okay. That's why later on Moshe Rabbeinu gave them Musar and said, Monavshah. He put the sin of the golden calf right next to the sin of Korah. He said, you people can't make up your mind. You made the sin of the golden calf because you considered me too important. And then you considered me not important. Which is it? Yeah, it's a good... And it's a question, what happened to Korah? According to one opinion, Korah was not burnt and he wasn't swallowed up by the earth. Korach died in a plague, and that fit his crime also, because a plague makes everybody equal, rich, poor, smart, right? Then the plague, everybody is affected, and it's contagious, right? Rich people get sick from poor people, and dumb people get sick from smart people, and vice versa. So Korach was looking to be entitled. You get entitled. You're entitled to get the plague. Then that's the great equalizer. And according to others, Korach was both burnt and swallowed up by the earth. First, his neshama was burnt, and then his body was swallowed up by the earth. Because somebody who feels entitled, who's not interested in accepting the fact that he has a role to play in this world, but he wants to do everything. He feels there's nothing he can't do. He wants it all for himself. He has both problems. He's looking for COVID, and he's also not interested in any kind of rules and limitations. So he got burnt and he got swallowed up, because the person who's jealous inevitably is guilty of both of the other things.
What about the plague?
No, so some say that that Korach was both of these, but not the plague. But if he only had the plague, then the explanation is what I said. Last thing, it says that everybody's mentioned in Korach's lineage except for Yaakov Avinu, because Yaakov Avinu represents the connection to the Avos, to Mesorah. Machlokes is the separation from Mesorah. When you have argument, you argue against the leader, that means you're arguing against tradition. Not the tradition of Fiddler on the Roof, but the tradition that makes the Torah authentic and gives it integrity. And what makes the Torah authentic and integrity is the fact that we go back all the way to Yaakov Avinu, who represents all the Avos. He was the Siyum of the Avos. And when you have Machlokes, you cut off from that. There is a point where there's no longer a connection to Jewish tradition, to Mesorah, because if you don't have a leader, there's no Mesorah. So Yaakov Avinu's name is not mentioned. You can't have that unbroken chain, and you have Machlokas at the same time. They don't go together. Okay. Any questions on this? Yeah. No, so some of his children, even little children, though, died, because once you take away authority and there's anarchy, then it's not a question of being punished, it's a question of people are swallowing each other alive. Even children suffer. The children of Korach were the adults who did tshuva. They, it says, got a high place in Gehenna, and they're being preserved until the time comes when they'll be able to get out of Gehenna. They were mahara b'tshuva, but they didn't actually do it. So they didn't deserve to be killed. On the other hand, they didn't deserve to be saved. So they're somewhere in limbo. Okay. Any other questions? The what?
That means
they
were around,
right? Right. No, there were some children that mamish did tshuva. Didn't follow their father. They followed Moshe Rabbeinu. They were saved completely. There were some of them that were mahara b'tshuva. They got swallowed up, but they didn't get killed, and they're being preserved somehow. And then there were those of Korach that either were little children who were swallowed up, Dasam Vaviram, together with Dasam Vaviram, or that they followed their father and they deserved to be punished on their own.
Well, I was learning some comments on the parrot that this is on the floor this week, that there was a jealousy in the Torah. Actually, angels were jealous for Avraham, and then they created the Yetzer Hara. Is it possible that they created the Yetzer Hara, or actually
created the Yetzer Hara?
Huh? Or Satan?
No, the Rabbanim Shem created the Yetzer Hara.
Ah, that's what I want to know.
Yeah. Nobody creates anything except God. And God created the Yetzer Hara in order that we should use it in a positive way. Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's
let's say some of the authority, 5% of what they say we don't agree with it, we think it's wrong. Who are we to not agree with it? And we should, if we're going to listen to some of the authority, we should restore them too. We should give them through the cupboard. Now, what that we think part of what he said is incorrect.
Okay, there's. It doesn't mean that you can't argue with an authority figure. You can question it. You can question it. No, you can question it privately and respectfully. And people can be wrong, right? Even rabbis can be wrong, right? Sometimes, a lot of times, they're wrong too much times. They shouldn't be rabbis, but they're right. But they can be wrong, and you can question them and you can argue with them. But in the end, right? Even if they don't agree and they're wrong, accepting the authority is better than not accepting the authority, because the results of not accepting the authority is much more. That doesn't mean you can't question them and you can't try to convince them that they're wrong. And if they're really good people, they'll admit they were wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu also made mistakes. He also did sins.
You know, yeah. Being president of a shul one time.
Yeah, I was thinking about you the whole time.
You've got people that just would argue with you, say, oh, you know what I mean. But the others would give you actually constructive criticism. In this way you could improve.
Right, 100%. 100%. There's nothing wrong with arguing with a rabbi, as long as it's done respectfully and it's done in a way that you're trying to point out that, from what I see, this is. And if he sometimes he'll admit he was wrong. Sometimes he'll explain to you why you're seeing it wrongly. That's fine. That's not machlokas. That's give and take. That's called machlokas l'shem shamayim, where you argue with somebody. What's wrong is arguing against somebody. And you want to be right, that's wrong.
Rabbi, you talked about Koch, two questions about the tzitzit and the book, rule full of books. But he had one more question about a poor woman with a little lamb and so on. How does that fit into the
That fits in with the 250 people, the opportunists. Right? All of a sudden, they want to take advantage of a situation where now we can push our way in. Before, when there was an organized, you know, kahila, we couldn't push our way in. But now, when and we can come and show that Moshe Rabbeinu was oppressing people, and the poor, you know, what he's referring to is a medrash. The medrash says it was a poor widow, and Korach used her as an example. It never really happened. He made it up. Poor widow, all she had was a little field, and she went and she got her grain to live on, with her and her daughters, and Aaron comes and says, okay, you have to give me your truma and a tenth of your crops. And she said, you know what, I can't live like this. So she sold it and she bought a lamb. Aaron comes along and says, you have to give me the beginning of the shearings of the wool. And in the end, Aaron took everything from her. So they show that Moshe and Aaron are in it for themselves, and they're just what's it called, opportunists. They're trying to take everything away from the people. And when you see the chance of people are upset with the leader, then you pull yourself in and try to, you know, add fuel to the fire and make up stories and bring this thing, and then there's all of a sudden meetings where everybody brings their gripes against the leader. It looks like you found this interesting. You live in Miami. It's in every community like that, and it's all the it follows the same pattern. So if you were ever a shul president or a lay leader, you'll know that it's the same thing applies to lay leaders, applies to rabbis, except rabbis more.
Is that a Jewish thing or what?
No, I'll tell you, it's not a Jewish thing. In Cleveland, years ago, there was a rav of the Kehila died. Now that rav, when he was alive, people did like him, like any rav. Now when he died, the people who didn't like him decided they're going to get even, and they don't want his son as the rav. Who was the next in line? It's his son really inherits his position, and his son was a big Talmud Chacham. But they didn't like the first Rav; they don't want his son either. And other people said, "No, the son of the Rav has the rights to the thing. We want him; they're a fine person." So it became a terrible machlokas. I mean, really bad. I mean, really, to the point where on Shabbos, if somebody from one side of the argument got an aliyah, the women from upstairs, again the women, used to throw down things on the person, you know, what's it called, not candy, missiles or whatever, and they came to fist fights in the middle of shul. They had to hire an armed guard to stand in the shul to make sure that people wouldn't have fist fights with each other. That's how bad it became. So it was a joke in the community. I mean, this place was like, you know, a terror. During the same time, I saw an article in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the newspaper in Cleveland, of a Presbyterian church where they, wanted to throw out the priest, the minister, and there were fist fights in the church over, you know, what's it called, the two different sides, and the same exact thing. As I said, the Rabban Shalom at least is protecting the honor of Klal Yisrael. That people shouldn't think it's only Jews. Goyim also can do this. So it's not only a Jewish thing.